Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek. How are you today?
I am enjoying the coffee that you've made for me.
Oh, well, you're welcome. You're welcome anytime.
And
all right, isn't it?
Danielle made us a cake as well.
Yeah, she did. She did. She made us a cake and then she fucked off.
This is the bloody life, isn't
it? The life.
Coffee and cake.
Coffee and cake. A dog and some films. It doesn't get much better. Yes, hello, listeners.
It won't.
It won't ever get better. We're going to talk about films again for some time.
I should hope so.
About half an hour. We have, as preparation for this task, watched some films, haven't we, Marek? You've been to the cinema, I have not. I have been to my own personal cinema, which is a television not far from here.
Is that what you call it, your personal
my
cinema?
My own personal cinema.
Do you say to people, oh, I'm just going watching my personal cinema tonight?
That's right, yeah. And they go, oh, God, he's fancy.
How big
does
a screen need to be before you can say it's a cinema, personal cinema?
Well, this clearly isn't a personal cinema. I mean, this you probably couldn't buy a television this small now.
It's a 32.
No, is it? 27?
No, it's bigger than that.
Okay, 32 then, maybe. But it's not huge.
Not cinema, not personal. I wouldn't go around talking about saying it's my personal cinema.
Well,
I thought you, mate.
I don't go around saying it.
I wouldn't go around shouting from the rooftops about my personal cinema when my TV was only that big.
I'm just going home to watch my personal cinema. I'll have a bag of Quavers, please, mate. Yeah, I've watched some streaming services, is what I was getting at there.
Okay.
But you've been to the cinema.
Yes. And it's not like me to moan. But I was annoyed. We always talk about things we get annoyed by in the cinema.
It's mostly light and people.
Guess which one it was.
Was it people?
Yeah, it was people.
Yeah.
I was annoyed by a coat.
A coat?
Yes.
I mean, you're really pushing the boat out on what you can be annoyed by.
I was sitting there thinking, I'm annoyed by this, and I was thinking about talking. I watched the film yesterday, and I thought I'm going to talk about being annoyed by this. However, I'm justified in being annoyed by this.
Okay, what was the coat doing and where
was it? Well, it was on someone.
Oh, right.
So it was. I went to go and see the film.
Oh, they kept the coat on?
They kept the coat on. Anomalisa, which is the Charlie Kaufman animation, was nominated for a Best Animation Oscar. It's a very quiet. There's almost no music in the film, hardly any. So it's a very, very quiet film. And the cinema, as usual, was a quite big cinema, and I was sitting on the back, and there's someone in the row to me, just about four or five seats to the right, and they're in one of these coats, which was a bit a raincoat like this.
Yeah.
And all the way through, I'm going to replicate it now.
Yeah. Oh, why couldn't they sit?
They
stay
just
still.
They weren't sitting still. And their coat was just doing this all the way through.
That's infuriating.
And I thought, am I right to be infuriated? And I thought, I can't really say.
I mean, it's noise,
still.
Isn't it?
It was just this weird. And I thought, you can't be comfortable wearing that coat indoors.
What do you think it was? Do you think they had worms?
It was just...
Was it worms? Did they look like someone who would have worms? Did they look like someone who would pick their bomb and then eat their food with their hands?
Yes, it definitely looked like that.
Yeah, it's probably worms, mate.
It was like those people who don't wash their hands after they've been to the toilet.
Yeah, that's worms. That's where you get worms. Little white ones.
I never understand that. People don't wash their hands.
No.
When you've just been... Anyway.
When you've just... Yeah, it happens a lot with urinals, doesn't it?
I don't understand why you would not do that. But I got annoyed by that. So that's, I wonder.
maybe it's if touching your dick makes your hands slightly cleaner than they were before. So you go, well, you know, I'm ahead.
Yeah.
It's the kind of person, is what I'm saying.
It was a man with an annoying coat, and he just looked like someone who spends a lot of time watching internet pornography.
Okay, yes.
So he looked like me.
So he was uncomfortable. sure. Yeah.
No, he didn't. He just looked like an IT loser. Anyway, that's not the point. So I went to see the film. That was the annoying thing. I worry where I was justified being annoyed. This film, what is it about? I'm going to tell you. It's about a man called Michael Stone. It's almost animation, sort of puppetry animation. And they've got these, and he plays, it's David Thewlis voices him.
Okay.
And he's he's going to a speech at a conference, and he's staying at one of these inane hotels.
I've seen screenshots, not a trailer of this, but it looks quite like the puppets used in Being John Malkovich, which is another
similar to the ones that
John Cusack does.
They're very human, and they're very human in their movements. It's a film about the mundanity, and even having David Thewlis doing the voice of his really sort of oppressed, world-weary voice.
Yeah.
And he feels like this really depressed character. All the other characters have the same voice and the same faces apart from one. And it's almost about going, a man, my reading of it, of a man going through a midlife crisis where everything's the same, nothing's new. And he goes to this hotel, to this beach, everything's bland and boring. Not much happens in it. It's almost like a feels like a bit like a Jane Austen novel, you know, where it's, everything's really, really dull. He can't find any enjoyment in his life. And that sense of the dreary really comes across. And it's really well done. And it's one of those films you end up thinking about more. You really feel quite oppressed.
Yeah.
And even though there's puppets playing all the roles, or whatever they're called, the animated things, it feels more real than a lot of films in terms of acting. It's really realistic. Just the conversations of just an English guy working in America. He's gone to Cincinnati to do this conference.
Yeah.
The tax driver, everyone can't really understand what he's saying, even though he's speaking normal English voice, and they ask him if he's Australian. No, even when he says yes, they don't understand what he's saying. He's really tired of everything. He tries to meet with an ex-girlfriend, and then eventually he meets up with this one woman in the hotel who's got a different face from all the others. And I won't say any more spoilers apart from that. It's a one-night relationship in a hotel, and it's really accurate about the minutia and the small things, and the conversations aren't really ever put into script because they're so boring and inane, but his view of them is really funny in a sort of odd way. I don't think it's his adaptation is the one where Nicolas Cage plays with his brother, which I think is a work of a genius. For me, it's up there script wise but I think, what is he trying to do with this film? He's trying to express the sort of lack of joy in modern life, and I think this man who's seeing everything is the same, so all the magic's gone, and that's his experience, so it has to be that sort of way. Is it really an enjoyable experience? It's more of a sort of, his films are big sort of films that make you think. Some things I don't really fully understand what he was trying to do.
Okay.
What he was trying to make me think. So I'm still mulling them over, but I'm fascinated to hear what the other film Fandango listeners thought of it. I mean, all the other characters apart from have the same faces and the same voice. So all the female characters.
Also, it has a cast of three, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. But all the other characters have the same face and the same bloke doing the voice okay. of all the women parts and all the male parts. So you sort of get what takes a while getting used to that.
It's like watching Italian or Russian dubbed television.
Yeah, but it's all done on purpose. It's a, just sort of a comment piece on modern life, really, I suppose.
Right.
And the feelings of a man going through a midlife crisis. And the puppetry is fantastic. It's odd how their sort of faces look like they're about to come off, but that's done on purpose.
Right.
They have this sort of line between their eyes, there's a gap okay. in their faces where you think, what's that for? It sort of doesn't, it's not really ever addressed.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's obviously a stylistic thing, it has a sort of meaning to it, or I can't talk too much about it. But the puppetry is fantastic, and the movement, the way they move at points, I don't know what the techniques they use, whether they actually did, it was computerised or it was done stop motion. I've not looked into that, but I give it 6 or 7 Mariks. A slightly unsettling, interesting piece.
Wow, there you go. Annalisa. I mean, Andy Kaufman's very... Charlie, sorry. Mental. Andy Kaufman's the comedian, isn't he?
Yeah.
Charlie Kaufman is always interesting.
Yeah.
Right, I'm not sure if I've seen all of his films. Adaptation's brilliant, and Being John Malkovich is excellent as well. But
And Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yes, of course. Is that him? Yeah.
He wrote that. Yes.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I'll go through some more. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind was all right.
It's okay. Yeah.
I'm just going. Sorry, I'm just looking on my IMDb. This is fascinating for everyone.
Why not browse along at home?
I can never pronounce this. Synecdoche, New York.
Synecdoche,
New York. I started watching it and I liked it, and I gradually got lost and I didn't understand what was going on.
I've
and
not
I hate
seen
it and I gave up on it.
Synecdoche.
It was just so meta and so pop eats itself.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go, Annalisa. Sounds interesting at the very least. I think it's time for this.
You're good at reading, aren't you?
I'm okay, yeah.
What about...
yeah?
Matthew Beaton's letter.
Matthew Beaton? Okay, Matthew Beaton has written in, and he says he's from Essex, so please read my letter out in an Essex accent, a bit like Schlag, Ray Winston. So, right, Dirty Beast, I'm here to kill your monster.
Sexy Beast?
Dirty Beast.
He's Dirty Beast.
Ray Winston. He played Sexy Beast. Okay, quite right. Sexy Beast. Dear David and Merrick, I was curious to know what your thoughts are in regards to watching films in the luxury of your own home, coupled with easy access to a mobile phone. In the past, I've found myself putting on a film and immediately picking up the mobile and looking at the usual garbage that one tends to read on these devices, only to get halfway through the film and not have taken in any of the film and completely wasted my time. I have a new rule where I leave my devices in another room so I cannot use them during my viewing time, so I can give the film my full attention. Do you find the phones a distraction, or are you a lot cleverer, smiley face, than me? And this is not an issue for your good selves. Keep watching the films and not your mobile phone screen unless you're watching a film on your mobile and go crazy. Many thanks, Matt Harlow in brackets. Sent from mail for Windows 10.
He's got Windows 10.
Fucking show off. Okay. It's a very new thing, isn't it? Well, it isn't. It's probably 10 years old, but people didn't used to play Snake on their phone whilst the film comes on. But I do find myself habituated to my smartphone. And even against my better judgment, I will just, as soon as something, you know, I start to dip. And it's like an addict. It is like an itch. You know, you just pick it up and find yourself putting Facebook on, even though you're not interested and you are actually interested in the film. It is the worst. And I agree with Matthew. I think you need to put your phone in a drawer like you do, because we are just slowly just... Films will get worse if what they are as a product is something to be on in the background. Do you know what I mean?
I'm totally addicted to the internet. It's frightening.
Yeah.
I think when you're sitting at home, and my job's same as yours, acting and writing, and you just find distractions.
Yeah.
And it's also just knowing it's so easy, and knowledge is fascinating.
Yeah.
Getting caught on an internet loop. You have your thing, you look at your websites, you know, what do I look at? BBC... Facebook, Hotmail, Twitter,
yeah.
A comedy website, American football, basketball.
Yeah.
And I get stuck on some weird Wikipedia loop where you've spent half an hour and you don't even know how you got to this weird thing.
It was looking up bums.
Looking up bums.
What are they, though?
I waste so much of my life on the internet, and the temptation is there in films. Where have I seen him from? What's he been in?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And suddenly you've got your phone in your hand. That's why I try and dump my phone in a different room. And that's why going to the cinema, you can't do that.
But I don't get that urge in the cinema. There's something about the ritual of going to outside of your own home, sitting in a darkened room, there's other people there, the lights come down, it's exciting, that does hold your attention. Whereas if you're on your own sofa watching your own TV, you do just... You find yourself half watching what's going on and going, yeah, I'm following it. It's the worst, yeah. It is a shame.
I'm telling you, I'm terrified by my addiction.
Yeah, yeah. I genuinely get an itch every now and again. If you know, especially if you know you're in slightly anxiety-producing situations. You know, like being surrounded by a load of strangers. You know, on public transport or whatever. You just find yourself going, even somewhere like the tube where you don't have any signal to look these things up. You still get it out. And still, you know, it becomes a dummy, doesn't it?
Well, a lot of my work and things comes through Hotmail and even Facebook things.
Yeah, yeah.
So you think you have to, if it goes off, I think, actually, I've got to check that because there might be an audition or something asking if I'm available. So I've got no choice but to look at it.
Yeah, but it's not like it won't still be there an hour later, is it?
I've actually lost stuff.
Really?
Yeah, but not... Anyway, that's boring.
No, but it's a good point, and I think Matthew's got the right idea. Stick your phone in a drawer.
Put it in the drawer, or put it in the bin.
That's an expensive habit. You have to be a billionaire like Marek to get away with the smartphone bin.
Yes, a billionaire policy. Indeed. Ben,
No, go ahead. Who's Ben?
Ben Grubb has written in.
Would you like to read Ben Grubb's email? Eh?
Yes. Please read this outside of a Marv voice of NBA Albert. I'm not going to do the voice because a lot of the time when I hear myself do it, I listen back to these occasionally. It really annoys me. Dear David, American buddy, on a recent episode, you were again discussing sports documentaries. And this reminded me that I wanted to get in touch with you to recommend the ESPN 30 for 30 series. I love a good sports doc, particularly related to basketball and or the NBA. The 30 for 30 series covers a broad range of different stories, many of which focus on some lesser-known players, people or stories involved in sports. I've been working my way through the ones available on US Netflix, and some highlights are as follows. Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks, focusing mainly on Reggie Miller and the rivalry between the Indiana Pacers and New York Knicks during the mid-90s, as well as Miller's personal rivalry with lifelong Knicks fan Spike Lee. Do you know who Reggie Miller is?
No.
Great player for the Pacers, and there was lots of fights and stuff with the Pacers and the Knicks, I remember, but you have to be into American sports. Without bias, chronicling the events of the death of Len Bias shortly before being drafted by the Boston Celtics. And there's a few lists. Jordan Rides the Bus, a more in-depth look at often glossed over period of Michael Jordan's first retirement when he played professional baseball. I love American sports. I used to watch all the Michael Jordan videos. Like, was it Come Fly With Me and Michael Jordan's Playground?
Space Jam?
No, the actual basketball videos, his highlights.
Okay.
That's because that was when I was a teenager growing up.
Oh, he transcended American sport to just be someone that sort of had... this mystique about him for kids. Like, I had a Chicago Bulls t-shirt because of Michael Jordan, had never seen a game of basketball. You know, he was just sort of awesome, and you saw him in adverts doing incredible basketball shit, you know, and just go, that guy's great.
I wanted to be a professional basketball player until I broke my ankle and I tore my ligaments when I was 17 playing against Parkhurst prison officers team.
Really?
I went up for a roundabout layup, some bloke grabbed me and threw me to the ground, ending my basketball career.
You could have been the next Dennis Rodman.
No, he's too big. I'd be more like Spud Webb.
Okay.
There's loads more for me to watch, but those have been my favourites. It's not often been the ones I've known nothing about which I've enjoyed the most. There's plenty about American football and baseball and various other things which I fully intend on watching when I've exhausted all the sports, all the basketball ones. I know Marek is a fan of American sports and sports documentaries, so if you haven't seen any of these yet, he'll really enjoy them. Keep watching the films. P.S. I also want to volunteer my services now to shoot the official Forceball documentary when the time comes. Well, Ben, thanks very much. I definitely will look at the 30 for 30 series. It sounds really great. Thank you. And I've already been making a really bad Forceball documentary.
Are you?
I've been making it.
Oh, yeah, you've been shooting it at every game we play, yeah.
I've been shooting the games, but if you go to the Forceball YouTube channel, there's the first three parts of the story of Forceball you can watch, which shows me making it in my back garden. I mean, it's a lot worse than any sports documentary you'll watch, but it's there.
But it's better than Draft Day. So
it's better than Draft Day, the Kevin Costner film, one of the worst films of all time. Super. Should we read another?
Yeah, let's read one more. Let's read one more. We've got an email, if my phone will recognise my thumbprint, from Rob Marland. And Rob says, "Does he?"
Rob Marland is a Wolfsburg player for the West Wales Snakehips.
That Rob Marland.
Yeah.
He says, "In your best Han Solo voice, please." That is incredibly difficult impression, isn't it? Give us a blast of your best Han Solo.
I can't do it. I've not got the range.
What's your best Han Solo?
All right, mate.
That's quite good.
All right, mate. Oh, we got stuck in some tar for a long while.
Where was he stuck in tar?
What was that black stuff he was stuck in?
Carbonite.
Oh, we're stuck in some bloody carbonite for ages.
That's good, I like that. Right. I'm sure you're as excited as I am to hear about the forthcoming Indiana Jones 5. In the original trilogy, Indy faced off against history's biggest assholes, the Nazis. But Crystal Skull was set in 1957, and so the Nazis were replaced with boring Russian commies and glass aliens. It was proper shit. The new movie is scheduled for release in 2019, so if you do your sums, and I have, it will probably be set in 1968, the year of the US's heaviest involvement in the Vietnam War. So, here is my challenge to you. Please pitch a thrilling Vietnam-based plot for Indiana Jones and the Tet Offensive. Thanks, Rob Marland. P.S. Jonathan Ki Kwan, who played Short Round in Temple of Doom, was born in Vietnam, and according to Wikipedia, is a taekwondo expert and stunt coordinator. If you don't shoehorn him in there somewhere, you need your heads examined. So, yes, this is the recent news that Indiana Jones 5 is definitely on, and definitely with Harrison Ford. And it's a good point. He's going to be so old. He is now going to be Indiana Jones around Vietnam time. It's a tricky one. I hated the last one.
It was terrible.
Oh, just
the CGI. The whole thing was terrible.
It just wasn't. You know, it. I think its worst crime was actually storytelling, which is what the team of Lucas and Spielberg used to do so well. Like, Spielberg at his height was the best pop storyteller in cinema. Like, every shot is doing something and it rattles on at a pace and it's got such a sense of fun to it. And Lucas's stories used to be exactly the same, you know. Enough people were able to mix in and take the edges off it. But he, you know, he had a great sense of something that was really fun. So, for me, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull felt like a sort of photocopy of a memory of Indiana Jones, and the next one won't be any better. But he wants us to pitch what the story could be. I mean, it's got to have a supernatural element for it to be Indiana Jones, so I don't know how you involve him in the Vietnam War without using Vietnamese folklore, which I think getting him involved in a horrific conflict like that probably isn't great swashbuckling fun.
It's going to be set in Vietnam.
No, that's what Rob was suggesting, because of the year it will have to be set in, because of the age of Harrison Ford.
Digging the tunnels and finding some sort of thing in the tunnels.
Okay, some tunnelling horror.
Yeah. I would have him finding William Dafoe from Platoon and saving him before you think he's dead.
But it's a time travelling film.
No, but
he finds the cast of another film from that era.
He finds William Dafoe is found alive from the end of Platoon.
Sure.
And he makes friends with him.
And Dr. Cox from Scrubs, who's also in Platoon. And maybe Martin Sheen from Apocalypse Now.
They leave William Dafoe.
Yeah, he does the famous Jesus pose.
He saves him. And they go and get some crisps.
Short Round, actually, I believe, was one of the stunt coordinators on the original Matrix film.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he was also Data in Goonies, of course.
I know. I wonder how he feels about it, if he wishes he'd have stayed on...
What? Doing what?
Acting.
I don't know. I mean, kid actors. For them to come out with, you know, a skill and a career and not insane. And really maladjusted, you know. Fair play to him. He's got a job.
I wonder if he made millions or not.
I doubt it.
You probably don't for your first one, do you?
Depends entirely on the contract, mate.
Yes, of course. It's always the way.
Always the way. Yes. All right. It's Indiana Jones. I sort of want all this circus around good intellectual properties that should be left well alone to end. I mean, they're so trying to push them all out before Harrison Ford dies, aren't they? It's quite clear, because he is attached to Star Wars, Indiana Jones and Blade Runner, and they are pushing through all of them as quickly as possible before he croaks or retires, you know?
I mean, you can understand how he could... Blade Runner, he could be old in Blade Runner and put it off.
Be interesting to see an old Deckard, but it doesn't need making, that's the thing. What other story is that the entire world of Blade Runner was built around this idea of what is human, and more human than human and all of that, you know? So... what would a sequel be about other than more of the same? And it's not a romp. Blade Runner wasn't, you know.
I like the whole world of Blade Runner.
Yeah, but it wasn't Aliens, was it? It wasn't like a theme park ride. It was a proper film. And so it doesn't need a sequel, you know. It's not just popcorn filmmaking. It would be weird for it to turn into that. Indiana Jones is a ride. It's a family romp. You can all watch together in, you know, on telly in an afternoon.
Or your personal cinema.
In my personal cinema there with my 27
inches. Do you want
inches.
To come round my personal cinema and watch a family romp?
A family romp sounds like a trap, doesn't it?
It does very much so.
If a stranger in his van pulls up and says, do you want to come to my personal cinema and watch a family romp? Just say no, kids.
Yeah.
Just say no.
You can always tell when you get in if the central locking goes on.
Yeah.
Then you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's true. Here's a question about Indiana Jones. It's very true. I can't deny it. We had a sort of romantic notion about the period that Indiana Jones was originally set in. You know, in the Second World War, with the Nazis being these sort of fetishized bad guys. We are allowed to hate them because there was so little ambiguity in their wrongness. They were evil guys, you know. The communists... doesn't work so well, you know, the Russians, I mean. It sort of does, and America's kept hammering that, you know. But they're just not as good of villains as the Nazis were. And, again, the Cold War is a less romantic period, because in the Cold War, everything became sort of absolute horror of the bomb hanging over everybody, and the ambiguity of right and wrong now. You know, it makes less good fairy tale stories. Going to the Vietnam War, which is arguably when America should have realised that actually they can't just be the good guys in their own grand epics on a global scale, you know. They are murdering people by doing this stuff. You know, they shouldn't have gone. It was a total mess. That is not a time you set Indiana Jones in. You know what I mean?
There's no fun, is there?
There's no fun to be had there. You know, it's... And I think that's why, again, Crystal Skull... floundered. It was no longer in the time that is long enough ago in a romantic enough period that Indiana Jones can work. And I don't want to see a dark, gritty reboot of Indiana Jones, you know. I don't want him struggling with morality and going mad in the Vietnam War because why are we out here, guys? Yeah. Which is what Vietnam is about.
I agree with you.
I cannot see... Because Rob's right. I mean, it will have to be set around the 60s. Where does he go? Unless he just ignores global politics at that time and ends up just... tracking down the Incas or going to the Arctic and doing a pseudo The Thing. You know, what's he going to do?
It's all about the guns and the whip and stuff like that. You can't even imagine him walking around.
What's a man in a fedora and a whip going to do in the 60s?
Yeah.
Apart from getting to, you know, the San Francisco scene. Yeah. I mean, what's he going to do?
I agree. Anyway, well, thank you for writing in, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. It's funny, actually. You should have been... you were talking about Annalisa and it being a sort of modern love story against a mundane background, because it's the film I'm going to talk about has similar themes. Sounds like a very, very different piece. But I watched, knowing nothing about it other than who'd made it, a film called Digging for Fire. Now, this is available on streaming services. I found it on Blinkbox. I'm sure it's available on others. And this is a film written by and starring Jake Johnson, who we'll be seeing far more of because he's the comedy relief guy in Jurassic World, who's in the control room and one of the good things about Jurassic World. He's actually well known to people on television from New Girl, which he's brilliant in. Anyway, he wrote and starred in this along with the director who wrote it with him, called Joe Swanberg.
Oh, Swanberg!
Yeah, and it's about a couple in their 30s. They've got a young kid, and they move in for a weekend to a client of hers's big old holiday home.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's nice, but it's about, you know, it's about love and who they are to each other and their relationship when they have a kid and they're tired all the time and all of these basically mundane suburban living is getting them down. And that it's a very resonant thing in your 30s of you look back nostalgically your 20s and teens and you feel like you'll never get back there, you know. And so the setup of this is they go to this house and he... doing a little bit of gardening as a favour for the person, finds in... there's a hill in the backyard and a tennis court and a swimming pool, and it's the kind of lifestyle they never have at home. It really is a holiday weekend. He finds what looks like a human bone and a rusted gun.
Uh-oh.
And the teenager in him, the sort of... the man in him, the craving adventure guy in him, wants to spend the weekend digging up this hill to see if there's a dead body in there, because that's a mystery. It's exciting. And she's like, this is a client of mine. Can't you just leave it alone? You've got to do the taxes. You know, you said you'd do the taxes. And you can see them just, they're not finding each other in terms of, you know, the couple they used to be. Anyway, that's the setup. And she then goes off to see her parents, and he invites his mates round, which includes Sam Rockwell and Brie Larson and Anna Kendrick. Marek, I've watched Pitch Perfect 2 or whatever it's called. Yeah. And Anna Kendrick, I now get it. If you watch the Pitch Perfect
film, I've seen them.
She's great in them.
Not a fan.
Oh, I like her now. I do like her now. But anyway, Orlando Bloom's in this, but he's actually alright in it. And it's about them having that frustration and wanting to be their old selves again and re-finding each other or not. I won't tell you what happens. But also, and it's called Digging for Fire because it's basically digging for trouble. It's
good
really
cast.
Great cast. And it's really well done. It's great.
Why have I not heard this before?
I don't know. It's had no publicity in this country because I assume... because New Girl doesn't have the audience figures in this country because it's on an obscure channel somewhere on cable or whatever. And, you know, whereas Jake Johnson's quite a big deal in the States. But it's a small film. He's just clearly pulled in a lot of favours for the cast. You know, Sam Elliott's in it as well.
Everyone's in it. It's a really good cast.
Yeah, incredible cast. And it's a really smart, well-written, well-directed film that will resonate with people in their 30s or people with kids. Anyone younger than that, I think they won't think anything is happening.
Is it good?
It is good. It's very good. Yeah.
Is it what, a drama, a comedy drama?
And it's but it was interesting what you were saying about Annalisa as well, that it's all very realistic. You totally believe, you know, everything that's happening, the way it's written and the way it's done, and they improvised around it. It's got such a natural, believable pattern to not only the speech, but everything everyone does. It's not like the dialogue has been placed on top of a rather overblown melodrama's bones. Like, the whole thing, you just go, yeah, no, that's good. And it works. It's really good. And had shades of Eyes Wide Shut in terms of exploring what fidelity means by, you know, if you take one step into it but you haven't actually done anything, are you being unfaithful, even if you're flirting with that line, you know? And it's all of that stuff. It's well worth a watch. I was really surprised. I thought it was great. I was expecting some, you know, pretty off the peg rom-com romance, but it was something better than that.
And it's Brie Larson, isn't it?
She is very good. She is very good. She's excellent. I mean, she's just a very natural, likable actor. She's not the biggest part in this at all. It's Jake Johnson, and his wife is Rosemary DeWitt, who I didn't know, actually. I didn't recognise her, but she's excellent as well. She's in all sorts of things. But, yeah. No, I track it down. I mean, it's the title's named
after Rosemary DeWitt. Sounds familiar, that name.
Yeah, she's in a few things, but nothing I've seen.
Well, how many Davies should you give it?
You know what? I'd give it 8. It's a low budget indie. It's just people in a house. That's it. But it's smart and it's enjoyable. You know, I think it stays with you a bit as well. So yeah, Digging for Fire, named after a Pixies song. So
Well, that's about it, isn't it?
I think that's about it for this week. We will be back next week with more chat about more films, different films. We won't just talk about these two week on week on week. If you'd like to get in touch about anything, then do email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Also, you can talk to one another on Facebook /filmfandango, or you can tweet us at Mr. David Reed, at Marit Larwood, or at Film Fandango. And finally, we do all of this for free, so if you would like to contribute towards our running costs and keep us going, then go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the links from there. And everyone who has,
thank you.
We'll be back next week. Keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.